Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to the Irish Farmers Journal podcast.
Hello and welcome to Down to Agribusiness. It's Phelan O'Neill here. I'm joined by my colleague Anne Finnegan to have a chat about some of the topics of the business world for this week. And one in particular I think stood out, and it's the piece of work that you've published in the print edition of the paper this week and online in relation to the level of support that's provided for farmers in the United States by the US government. Can you give us a quick summary of that just?
Yeah, so well, I think a lot of people would be familiar with the type of direct payments that farmers in the United States receive, you know, the crop insurance program, conservation programs, marketing loans. So all falling under the banner of kind of the normal direct payments or the standing direct payments that farmers would receive. But they also receive payments under ad hoc programs. And a lot of this comes in the form of disaster relief for various events that might occur during the course of farming. But in the past number of years, the ad hoc payments have really ballooned, particularly since 2019, with, I suppose, with two main pillars of payments. The first being trade-related payments. And the second wave of these payments, if you like, came to mitigate the impacts of COVID-19. And really what we've seen is, 2020 was an absolute spike in direct payments for farmers in the US, where direct payments accounted for almost 50% of their net farm income, which is way beyond what they would normally receive.
And tell me, in relation then to, much is made in global trade negotiations about the level of support provided by the European Union through the Common Agriculture Policy. Just from what you described there, it sounds like the US farmer would be at least receive actually more, if we take the last 3 years in particular, would be receiving more than any European farmer would through the Common Agriculture Policy.
Yeah, well, if you look at the EU, I think over the medium term, EU farmers receive around 26% of their income through direct payments, a bit higher in some countries, lower in other countries. So I think in Ireland, the average is about 37%. And I mean, in a typical year, it's much below 50% for US farmers. So you're probably looking at something in the region of 15 to 20%. But I suppose these payments are completely out of the ordinary. And I suppose, you know, some of the analysis around this kind of asks the question, well, you know, the events in themselves were obviously disruptive or had the potential to disrupt. And if you take the trade side and the trade wars, I suppose, initiated by the Trump administration, they were disruptive to trade. You had, issues with Mexico, Canada, China. But it was at a time of, of high commodity prices. So the impact to which, I suppose, the degree to which all farmers were impacted and all commodities were impacted by these trade wars is questionable. And similarly, when COVID-19 hit, it disrupted right across society and right across economies, but arguably probably a little bit less across agri-food commodities. I think, yeah, absolutely, the sector would have seen disruption to how food was consumed, how it was purchased. But in terms of absolute commodity prices remain strong and have continued to grow.
So the government payment then almost was a bonus payment in effect to many US farmers.
Appears to be. And I suppose, you know, where has it left farmers? If you look at income over the past 20 years, income levels in 2020 and 21 are at the highest levels, of some of the highest levels they've been, you know, with the exception of 2012 and 2013, on the back of strong commodity prices.
Is there budget implications for this then, and an expectation now in farmers that this is the way it's going to be? Surely maybe there's been a huge bit of quantitative easing that's taken place in the United States, and that debate's going on in Congress at the moment. But surely there's a longer term budgetary implication for this in terms of the next farm bill whenever it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Farm Bill was negotiated or agreed and finalised in 2018. So really, the next Farm Bill, I think, is due in around 2023. So negotiations are starting to get underway in the United States. So it's going to be, I guess, an interesting time and a challenge to wean farmers back off this money. It's interesting, listening to US farmers refer to this as Trump's money. So there's a real political dimension here as well. And obviously, going back into election times, the election cycle doesn't stand still in the States for too long. But yeah, absolutely, the challenge is going to be how to bring US farmers back from this. There's been some analysis in the States, not a huge amount of analysis on this, but some by a former chief economist at the USDA, Joseph Glauber. And interestingly, his findings were that in 2019 and 2020, these payments have most likely exceeded the WTO levels of domestic support to which the US is signed up to. So, I mean, that's another dimension as to whether the WTO or any of the international community take issue with that will be another thing.
It'll be a very long drawn out affair if they do.
Absolutely.
I'm going to change subject completely, Anne. Something that you've been covering there in the previous couple of weeks, and it raised its head this week again in the context of, I suppose, at a more political level, and that's the whole question of energy costs, and in particular gas, which of course has a serious knock-on effect for farmers through the values of fertilizer. We have seen this week prices get absolutely out of control until Russia decided to switch back on again. Why is gas price so important to farmers and to the agri-food industry?
Gas is a key ingredient in the production of ammonia fertilizer. So it's not used necessarily for the energy component of producing ammonia, but it's one of the chemical ingredients in producing ammonia. And it's also widely used in the meat processing sector. It's used in packaging of meat, of fresh meat and of other fresh food in modified atmosphere packages to extend the shelf life. Mm-hmm. So when you pick up your tray of meat or prepare ready meals in a supermarket, that's packed with carbon dioxide, which is an off shoot from the fertilizer production process. So it's really critical to the food industry. And we're seeing that play out in the UK, where obviously in pig and poultry, in the pig and poultry sector, animals and birds are being backed up on farms. There's talk about welfare issues and about culling. There's talk about, you know, Christmas challenges and France and Poland coming to the rescue with turkey supplies. And it obviously hasn't hit to the same degree in Ireland in terms of the carbon dioxide issues. But we are seeing fertilizer, and Siobhan Walsh, our colleague, has done a lot of work on fertilizer prices over the past number of weeks, absolutely skyrocketing. I think it's fair to say that all of the fertilizer producers in Ireland are probably standing back from the market at the moment.
I don't think you can get a quote at this stage. They're not taking forward orders.
So look, it remains to be seen. It's an interesting political development.
Has to surely develop. Sorry, and just to finish that point, this surely has to have implications for the cost of food. If this key ingredient in the process, we're at farm level with the fertilizer, but at the processing sector, we have the use of gas and packaging and more directly in the pig and poultry sectors. This surely has to lead to higher prices.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's no way that this can be, the cost can be absorbed by farmers, and I would indeed say by processors as well, who I suppose, whether we like it or not, are generally working on quite a low margin. Mm-hmm. But I mean, look, it also begs questions, Phelim, around our energy dependency in the EU. We are really dependent. First of all, we're still dependent very much on fossil fuels. We're secondly dependent on non-EU nations to provide that fossil fuel energy for us. And I suppose it brings up the whole question around, what are we doing in Ireland in respect of renewables, in respect of anaerobic digestion? How can that contribute? How could the digestate and anaerobic digestion contribute to some of our fertilizer requirements? So there's a huge amount more that we could be doing that we're not doing. And I suppose that farmers would probably say they need a lot more support in making that and opening up that industry and realistically making it something that's investable and can generate a return with a huge environmental dividend as well.
Mm. So we have two debates then. We very much think about the food security debate. We have actually, within Ireland, we need to have an energy security debate probably.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're talking about the country importing coal again this year to fuel Money Point. And I read comments by Eamon Ryan recently saying that this is going to be part of our future over the next number of years. And I think in fairness, that comes as a shock and a surprise to a lot of people. And when you look at our dependency in the EU and in Ireland, it is a surprise, given what we know. And I suppose, agriculture is a number of steps behind energy in terms of our climate plans. So, the fear is and the question is, do we end up taking steps in agriculture and in agri-food that leave us in a similar situation, by the end of the next decade, where we see leakage of food production to other countries and we're importing it back in, who potentially have a higher higher emissions than Ireland have. So it's a huge melting pot. But I don't think we're out of the woods yet in relation to gas and energy. So there's been a hint, I think, from what I've read from Russia and from Vladimir Putin, that they have a willingness to supply more gas. I suppose we need to see that flowing and to see a real impact. It has impacted on futures prices and sentiment in the market. But I suppose where the rubber hits the road will be when people go to secure contracts and when we see that gas flowing.
No doubt, and that's something that you'll be keeping a watchful eye on over the course of the next few weeks, and we'll be reporting on the Farmers Journal. Listen, that's where we wrap this week's podcast in this edition of Down to Agribusiness, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Phelim.